Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Freddie Sayers and this is Unheard. Back in March, everyone's world suddenly changed.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home.
So on day one of lockdown, we launched Lockdown TV, a place where we could gather experts, scientists, writers, politicians, thinkers, to try to help us understand what was going on in this strange moment and what kind of world we were going to get at the end of it. And now, due to popular demand, here we are in podcast form. Welcome to Lockdown TV. So conversations about race have been raging here in the UK, just like they have all over the world for the past year. And one government minister has been outspoken on the topic. Her name is Kemi Badenoch.
I think it's one of the advantages you have as a first generation immigrant is that you can often compare two totally different places. And that's one of the reasons I always say that I think Britain is the best place in the world to be black specifically. And I still stick to that.
She is Exchequer Secretary for the Treasury and also an Equalities Minister. So let me just go straight in with, I suppose, the obvious question. Do you believe that the UK is a racist country?
No, I don't. And I think many people find that answer challenging. And the analogy I often use to express it is I don't believe that the UK is a criminal country, despite almost everyone I know having been a victim of crime. The threshold for what one uses to describe whether an entire country is racist for me is quite high and needs to be really embedded in systems deliberately designed to disadvantage people, like we saw in the US with Jim Crow, like we saw in South Africa with apartheid. Doesn't mean that we don't have problems, but my view is really that we should look at the very best in terms of the behavior of the people around us and the behavior of the majority, rather than look at the behavior of the worst behaved minority as a template for how to define a particular race. And that cuts across all races.
The fact that you have to be careful before answering that question is itself quite interesting, isn't it? That you're a minister of the crown and I'm asking if it's a racist country, but a lot of people will find it unacceptable for you to say that the UK is not racist. How do you think we got to that point?
Honestly, I know, and this might be challenging for you, Freddie, or maybe not, because Unheard isn't one of the papers, I think, or the media outlets that does the worst of it. But I actually think a lot of it is the way the media portrays a lot of news. So I give a complex, nuanced answer about race in the UK, and the headline is "Minister denies any racism at all exists," and the Stand First sort of slightly supports that. And then maybe towards the end of the article, you see actually that's not exactly what she said. So I always try and make sure that I make my statements in a way that they can't be misinterpreted by those who deliberately want to misinterpret. And I think that media coverage post the internet, post social media in particular, has been unhelpful in terms of the debate on very sensitive issues, not just on race, but a host of other things, and often brings out the very worst in terms of human behavior. And I can have a whole hour's conversation with you about social media, but I think that's often where a lot of the misinterpretation happens.
I mean, something has changed as well, hasn't it? This government is definitely more outspoken and more prepared to push back against some of those narratives. I mean, we had the report from the Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparities a couple of months ago, which was received with quite a lot of controversy. A lot of people were trying to shut it down. What's been your view of that report? And do you think the government will broadly accept its findings?
Well, I think that's the report example is a really good one. We commissioned that report, the Prime Minister commissioned that report because of the tensions that we saw in the summer of 2020. And the purpose of the report was to investigate why disparities between different ethnicities existed. And it found a whole host of reasons why. But there are many people who don't really want to engage with a myriad of reasons. They only want to talk about discrimination, which is one area, it is one cause, but it's not the only cause. And quite often it's not the primary cause. But looking at a whole range of issues that cause disparities is what the report was actually quite good at. And I think that it gave us some really brilliant analysis that will allow us to make policy over the coming years.
There was quite a blowback, wasn't there? You were attacked for it. There were the authors were attacked for it. Mm-hmm. Who are these forces who are so keen to paint as racist anything that is a little bit more nuanced in that way?
I'm not going to name any names because that in itself will be creating headlines. I'm really trying to take some of the toxicity out of the debate, and I'm trying not to challenge individuals, but to challenge the arguments. And what you will recognize with many of the attacks is that they aren't actually challenging the arguments, they're challenging the individuals. So the report authors, all but one ethnic minority background, had an ethnic minority background. They were called coons, they were called Uncle Toms, their workplaces were targeted, they had death threats. And we can recognize in a liberal society that anyone who behaves like that certainly cannot be on the right side of the argument. And there are people who are threatened by hearing these things because they, in some way, they profit, even if not financially, but probably emotionally from these arguments. It helps them, I don't know, perhaps affirm their own beliefs. I think many of these beliefs do come from a hard left perspective. And quite often I have to explain to many people who are very well-meaning that these arguments, which you think are perhaps black arguments that black people make, they're actually the arguments of the black left. And you wouldn't expect anyone to say white people think this particular view because that's what Jeremy Corbyn thinks or someone else from the British left. So why would you do that just because these people are of a particular race?
So do you find you get targeted because you're a black politician and you're not saying the kind of things that you're expected to say?
All the time. But I went into politics knowing what I was getting myself into. And I know that if I don't say these things, it'll be very hard for other people to say what they believe to be true. And it's important that we be brave as politicians and we tell people what we really think, even if it means a backlash, even if it means endless insults on social media. That's fine, because what really pleases me is that after any intervention I make, I get so many emails from not just white people, but actually lots and lots of ethnic minorities who say, thank God you're saying this, because it feels like no one understands my point of view. No one wants to hear my point of view. You know, I get emails from black people in corporations who are being made to do diversity training that they think, for instance, is quite offensive and very demeaning. And they've got no arguments, and actually having a government minister saying we don't think that this is the right way to do these things is very helpful. So I'll keep going. It doesn't matter how much abuse or how much threat I get.
So one reaction is the abuse, which we've just talked about. The other sort of playbook is now emerging, is that the opposition then says that you are starting a culture war. If you touch on any of these issues, the argument is, the government is picking a culture war battle in order to pander to its base or throw red meat to the base or something. What's your reaction to that?
It's very disheartening when you hear that. I hate the term, the phrase culture wars. I don't even like the term woke. It's not a word I use. And one of the reasons why is because it makes it sound like you're fighting a battle with people rather than making a very clear, coherent argument. And you are right. For a long time, the government didn't say anything on these topics because we don't want to look like we're distracted from the things that really matter to people, looking after their health, their education, the economy. But you can look at the Batley and Spend by-election is a very classic example that even when the right says nothing, a lot of these arguments that are supposedly culture war arguments, they're happening purely on the left. You look at the battle between LGBT rights versus the rights of religious minorities. This is mostly a battle on the left. The same thing with left-wing feminists and trans rights activists. These are not right-wing battles. The right doesn't need to get involved for these so-called culture wars to take place. These are battles about a difference of opinion and very poor arguing that's taking place, very poor debating. And as a government, I think it's important that we set an example in terms of how to carry out the debate. I hope that article that I wrote yesterday is how people engage in it. But also, like I said before, taking away a lot of the heat out of it. We need to do better as a country.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
In terms of this conversation.
You mentioned a piece that was, I think, in the Telegraph yesterday that touched on a concept called white privilege. Which again is one of these sort of buzzwords. No doubt people will accuse that of being another culture war if it's mentioned. Why did you think it was important to speak out about the concept of white privilege?
Because the Education Select Committee wrote a report last week and talked about how poorly lots of white working class boys in particular were doing in terms of attainment. And this isn't in comparison to wealthy ethnic minorities. This is in comparison to lots of ethnic minority groups who are also on free school meals. That's the metric we use, who's on free school meals. So this can't just be an issue around race. There's a lot around deprivation, geographical disparities as well. But when the zeitgeist is talking about white privilege, unconsciously, I think a lot of the policy is then focused away from those people who probably need it the most into areas that are easy for other people to talk about. And that's, I think, was a very, very good point made by the Select Committee, and they were attacked for it. And I was giving my view of what the problem is with this phrase. And I think many people who use it are well-meaning, but they don't understand that it is a contested, the meaning of the phrase is contested. So I referenced the BBC using one person's opinion of what it means, but I have a totally different opinion of what that means, as do many other ethnic minorities. Why is that not used? And the fact that it is so contested means that we shouldn't just talk about it as if everyone knows what the meaning is. A lot of these debates we're having are very much around language and semantics and people putting forth opinion that's not settled.
You quoted some statistics in that piece about education and how actually poor black kids are outperforming poor white kids in education terms. Is that your understanding?
Yes, in many respects, yes, but you even have to dig deeper and be more granular. The phrase, or rather the term black, covers a very, very diverse group of people, from black Caribbeans to Somalis, who don't necessarily fit in within the typical black African, which references population-wise, more West Africans from Nigeria and Ghana. So what we want to do as a government was one of the recommendations from the credit which we accepted very early on was disaggregating the BAME term, because as we're approaching, I think there's, I read something recently about super diversity. It's not particularly helpful in telling us what's going on.
You grew up partly in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And one thing you've mentioned in the past is that racial or ethnic tensions in that country can be pretty bad. What did you learn from that that you think we should or shouldn't do over here?
Yes. So I lived in Nigeria till I moved to the UK age 16. And I came, you know, I came here on my own. And it was very interesting observing that a lot of the behaviors which people ascribe to white people, when I lived in a place where everybody was black, everybody looked like me, you still see those behaviors. Many of these negative attributes are human attributes. They're not white attributes. And also with some of the more bizarre teachings about what is white, being on time, believing in the Enlightenment and free speech and all these things. These are not white things. They are universal liberal human values. And growing up in a place where everybody looked the same meant that I didn't have a view of being othered. And I chose to come to this country. And I think it's one of the advantages you have as a first generation immigrant is that you can often compare two totally different places. And that's one of the reasons I always say that I think Britain is the best place in the world to be black specifically. And I still stick to that.
So in Nigeria, when you were there, there were ethnic tensions as well. I mean, would you say that Nigeria is a more racist country than the UK, for example? I mean, are we able to make those kind of comparisons?
No, to be honest, I don't think you can really compare the countries because Nigeria has 300 different ethnic groups and some groups, you know, ally against another. It's very, very complex. So diversity brings a lot of complexity and how you handle the diversity is really important. So for instance, one lesson that I would say I learned from Nigeria was about quotas, where there are ethnic quotas for government positions, and it has a really, really bizarre distorting effect. On the one hand, it's fair because everybody is equally represented. So if all you want to do, and even then, I mean, you get about 36 different states. That's about as far as you go within 300 people. But those 36 areas are represented. But you get distortion. Sometimes the worst person for a particular job ends up getting it because it's their turn. We have this weird thing where you have to swap from Christian to Muslim or North to South when you're picking the president. And you're not necessarily picking people for a job based on merit. That's, for instance, an example of something that I've learned and seen didn't really work there, but people still hang on to it because it was brought in as a way to make things fairer.
So would you be, in principle, against trying to kind of target percentages in that way?
Yeah, I think I've always been against quotas. It's not the conservative way. And I think that removing barriers to success, providing opportunity, that is what is critical, rather than trying to fix the outcome in a particular way. If you don't, and this is why the Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparities report is so important. If you don't tackle the root cause of a problem and you then try and change the outcome, the problem will continue. It'll just manifest itself in a different way. You've got to go diagnose the cause properly and then you can fix the issue.
And I guess the answer then is by focusing less on race, we might do better at helping people who are underprivileged. Is that fundamentally the argument? You want us to talk less about race?
I wouldn't say I want to talk less about race. I think I want us to talk more healthily about race. It's important to look at racial issues because if you ignore them completely, you might miss a lot. So what we want to do within the Equality Hub is look across more characteristics. So not talk less about race, but also look at a whole range of other issues. I think in France, they don't, for instance, capture data on race, which makes it very difficult for them to actually know what's going on. Because we don't shy away from these issues, because we look at them. Yes, there are uncomfortable conversations, but we should be brave and we should be trusting in our fellow citizens that we can have a healthy and productive conversation rather than try and shut it down or try and force a particular dogma or ideology, which are two opposing views that we share.
I guess I'm just meant, in order to correct the people who are most disadvantaged, race can be a bit of a distraction, can't it? I mean, you yourself came from well-to-do parents, and Kwasi Kwarteng, who's a cabinet minister, was at Eton College. Sometimes if one is overly obsessed with race, you miss the element of privilege, which can be more important.
I think my personal philosophy is that we should try as much as possible to focus on the individual. So like you said, I came from a middle class family, but when I moved to the UK, I became very, very working class. I was here on my own. I was working at McDonald's. I was washing toilets and scrubbing up and things. That was not a middle class experience at all. I went to an FE college. I was an apprentice before I went to university. But you can't use my race to tell my story. So yes, let's look at race in terms of what's going on and making sure we're not leaving anybody behind. But also, let's not focus on it to the detriment of other things that might be causing problems. The groups that are at a disadvantage will change from time to time. Quite often, it will be all races in a particular region. It could be a particular race at a particular point in time, perhaps because of recent immigration history. Have they come here as refugees or something like that? So they're going to be very far behind in many respects, a lot of the rest of the country. So always making sure that we're looking at the issue rather than the skin color, which can be a superficial type of analysis.
Okay, final question for you, Minister. Do you think we're at a turning point here? It feels like suddenly there's a lot more pushing back on some of these ideas. You are a government minister and you're making this case. Do you think we're at an inflection point in this debate?
I think the debate has become more honest. I think there is a lot more of people coming out and saying, I disagree and I won't be smeared as a racist or some kind of phobic person just because I have an alternative opinion. And that's where we should be. I think it took a while for it to get there because people are thinking what's going on and not necessarily want to jump in head first. People shouldn't be rash when having these discussions. It can be very sensitive, especially for those people who have had really awful, horrible experiences. We mustn't discount those. We do want to look at everything that's happening in the round. And we want people to trust us because we have an ambition to provide opportunity to all, irrespective of whatever background or gender or sexuality someone comes from. That's really what this government believes, and that's what we're fighting for.
Kemi Badenoch, thank you so much. And can I also say thank you for seeing the world beyond the BBC, and there are other audiences out there, and being our first Minister of the Crown on this show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was Kemi Badenoch. She is a minister in the Conservative government here in the UK. She is Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury and also an Equalities Minister. And she was our first serving minister to come on this show. Hopefully one of many more to come, because it is important that they are held to account beyond just the BBC and the mainstream media. So thanks to her for doing that. Really interesting to see the arguments she's putting forward. Quite sensitively there, I thought. Thanks to her, but also thanks to you for watching. This was Lockdown TV.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.